Blog Talk Radio.
And this is Shared Sacrifice. I'm Gary Barkley with Matt Stannard. We've got the hit spot intro music going. If I can get the board to actually work right, it doesn't ever seem to want to do that anymore. But again, I have Matt Stannard on with us. How are you doing tonight, Matt, on this Thursday? It is August 25th.
I'm hitting the spot. What can I say? I'm doing okay. I've had a very busy week, and it's not over yet. I'm still quite a bit to do, and also a long drive I have to take tomorrow, going down to New Mexico for a wedding of a couple of friends. That should be
drive.
Fun. It is.
Yeah, that's a...
It'll be about a 7-hour drive from Laramie to the. Going to a nice little village kind of in the middle of nowhere in New Mexico, in northern New Mexico, luckily. So not a terrible drive. How about you, Gary? How's your week been?
Well, my week has been very tiring, and my eyes are closing on me as we speak tonight. I'm very much looking forward to tomorrow at 3 o'clock when I can log off from my weekly routine and take a nice since I'm Jewish, I can take an actual Shabbat. It's nice to be able to. We're gonna light candles early.
I want a Shabbat. Can a week long Shabbat? Is that possible?
Yeah, I would call that a vacation, but is one of the things that I. I'm glad we're talking about this, because I know this show is supposed to be about politics, but it's not just about politics. It's about what's going on, awakening. I think there's an awakening going on in this country, and actually I think that's why a lot of us are very, very depressed, because we see where things have been and where they seem to be going. I just want to say, bringing up the Shabbat thing, the whole idea of the Jewish Sabbath. Of course, Christians do the Sabbath on Sunday, but I converted to Judaism about 3 years ago. Actually, three years ago, this last June, we formally converted, went through the mikvah and the whole formal process with rabbis and everything involved. The Bat Din is what it's called, which is a Jewish religious court to determine whether or not we have done our studying and all that kind of thing. It's basically the same kind of thing as if you were converting, say, into baptism, into Baptist or Catholicism.
Baptist, yeah.
But it's a little different. It's a little different because we're Jews. We have we have different things doing. And the one thing when we decided to at least start exploring it, my wife and I both converted at the same time. Obviously, we converted together. When we decided that we were going to explore, I mean, she was brought up a Catholic and all that kind of thing, and I've been an atheist my whole life, and I still admit that I am. I still converted to Judaism, and I was honest with my rabbi about that. I'm an atheist. Mm-hmm. That's really not going to change. I don't believe in God in the way that everybody else does. But nonetheless, I believed in the tenets of Judaism in terms of the study, because it really is I'm an intellect. I like to think of myself as an intellectual anyway, and a religion that is based around study. I mean, constant study. I mean, that's the whole thing. Torah study is the most important thing that a Jewish man can do. I loved that. Mm-hmm. I loved that idea. But one of the things that really brought me around to Judaism is the right one for me is we decided we were going to actually have a Shabbat, the old-fashioned, traditional, almost Orthodox Shabbat. We turned our phones off. We didn't turn on the TV. We didn't do anything. We didn't turn on the stove. We basically – it was in the summertime, so we could – you didn't need hot water like that. We did all the things you're not. We basically abstain from the things you're not supposed to do on Shabbat. We basically had an Orthodox Shabbat. We didn't light candles. We didn't do anything. We didn't play with fire. We didn't turn on the stove. We didn't turn on electronics. We turned off our phones and everything. And that first weekend, right there, I was like, oh, my God, there's a whole other world out here. And it wasn't just a world out there. It was a world within. There was no anything going on, you know, and it was just this truth. Yeah, it was an awakening. It's like, okay, this is wisdom, and that's all there was to it. And when I realized that wisdom was there, and when I realized the wisdom was there, you know, it's like that. Okay, that's it. This is what was for me. So the only reason I brought that up was because I think that for me, this week is a good example. It's been a very tiring week for me. I've just had some stuff going on. I've had actually a rough couple last two weeks. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, I've been thinking about this. You know, every day you read more and more about what's going on. You hear these false controversies about Hillary Clinton coming from the Republicans and the Associated Press and things like that. And they really are all made up because you know, the her foundation, you know, quid pro quo for her foundation and things like that. It's all of that is absolutely it's a non-starter. But the AP is doubling down on it because the AP now has some skin in the game because they got it wrong in the first place, and they can't admit that they got it wrong. And so, you know, they can't admit they got it wrong. And so, Allah, they're becoming like the Washington Post now. You know, they're becoming hacks. We didn't get it wrong because we reported it. Which really is the wrong approach to journalism, as far as I'm concerned.
Sure.
But from the standpoint of myself, you know, I'm bombarded with all this crap that's coming out about the politics. And the fact is we know that Donald Trump is truly a lunatic, and we know that Hillary Clinton is just going to give us away to the corporate. You know, TPP is going to pass here in the lame duck session because Barack Obama is going to push it through regardless of who wins in November because he sold out long ago and she's not going to object to it when she becomes president. And so at the end of the day, you know, we're looking at no matter what, we're circling the drain. And that's the way I'm looking at this. This is and I don't think I'm alone in that is that, you know, there has to be a way to stop this, but I don't know what it is. So I'm just as frustrated and tired as everybody else.
well, and bless you for being honest about that. Three thoughts about that. The first is I think that the change has got to come from a coalition of progressive groups inside and outside of the Democratic Party. So that means, you know, the progressive wing of the Democratic Party that's sort of disgusted with the DNC and disgusted with Clintonism, but is nevertheless, for whatever reason, and I respect their reasons, you know, is going to stay in the party, combining efforts with those outside of the party. And this is already happening. This is happening in many, many states where there are strong progressive coalitions that are independent of actual party politics. They run candidates. Those candidates are often Democrats, but they form different coalitions. So I think that's important. The second thing I wanted to say is the way I would have said it was that we know that Trump is a lunatic. We know that Secretary Clinton is the status quo, which is a more ordered and sort of dressed up variety of irrationality, but is nevertheless for many people a firewall right now against Trump.
Yeah.
And as I've said many times before, Clinton may stop Trump, but Clintonism is not going to stop Trumpism. That's a long-term battle that's got to be fought. Third thing I'm going to say is I'll tell you, since speaking of vacations, a friend of mine who's actually a candidate for office here in Wyoming and is a good friend and colleague went on vacation, went camping for a few days this week, and I think he's going to stay in to the weekend. And at one point, he, you know, he did get out his phone at the campground and got on Facebook and, you know, basically said, this is great because I don't have to watch news all weekend. And I jokingly said to him, hey, while you were gone, Trump dropped out of the race. And I realized when I said that, that probably a little part of him looked at that, and this is a politically savvy guy, a little part of him looked at that and said, you know, that may be possible. That's not an impossibility. Given everything that has happened in this campaign season, the idea that tomorrow Trump could just get up and say, I'm out. I'm outy cum laude. It's not impossible. It's improbable, but I think it's not impossible. I thought it struck me as funny that I could make that joke and that there would be a slight chance that that might not be a joke.
Well, you know, I think that's exactly right, because that's one of the problems that we have right now is that our entire political system has become such a joke, literally a joke, that you could read that whenever you read a headline, you have to make sure, is this The Onion? Because it's so, you know, it's so it's so ridiculous everything that's going on. And so, you know, I would have no doubt that he would if it would be profitable to him to drop out. And, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, how bad, you know, that's actually one of the things that we've talked about this before, that, you know, he already knows he's going to lose, and he's losing very badly. And just it's such a joke. I mean, we talked about it last week when they had the statues. They had just come out with the statues that very day. Those naked statues that they put in five different mm-hmm. U.S. cities of Donald Trump, and it's just so ludicrous that is political commentary today. I mean it's grossly offensive. And 15 years ago, 10 years ago, you could not have gotten away with something like that, because even his opponents. I mean, of course, if he were running 10 years ago or 12 years ago in 2000 or 2004, when 2000, even his political opponents would have said, you know, this is totally inappropriate. But the right. fact is that he himself is such a caricature of a person, of an actual human being, that you know, it's easy to look at, to point and laugh. And that's it. But, you know, he puts himself out there for that, specifically for that. Look at me. It's like, look, Ma, no hands. Look, Ma, no brain. That's what we get from Donald Trump. And he's not going to win. He's not going to be president. But the fact is he's already laying the groundwork for an insurrection. I lost because the game was rigged. But what about the lunatics that the real right wingers, the people from Stormfront and the American Nazi Party, believe it or not, the Communist mm-hmm. Party has been more or less outlawed in this country, but the Nazi Party has not been. And
right.
And
well, there yet, was no there was a Red Scare. There was but, no brown shirt scare. So
yeah, I know exactly. And so you end up with. You end up with people that he's saying, you know, I need monitors to go to the polling places to make sure that no shenanigans happen. Well, what happens when the brown shirts, they might be wearing something different. They might be wearing literally a red shirt that says Make America Great Again. And they start saying, hey, you know, this elderly black woman is not entitled to vote. And the people in the county courthouse say, well, yes, she is, you know, so let her through. And they say, no, we've got our guns, and there's no police officer around to do anything. And so now, you know,
that's a scenario that could happen.
It is. And what happens
now?
Then?
Now, I mean, technically, he still legal loses. Standpoint,
he still loses.
From a legal standpoint, there, you are not allowed to do that. I mean, you're not allowed to.
No,
you're not. Private citizen
stop
is not
that's
allowed to challenge anyone. But the question is, you know, how well monitored and how well policed will these voting areas be? Who knows if police presence is actually going to intimidate people more, because it most certainly could.
Yeah.
And C, The very presence of them, of militia, of right-wing militia near polls. And so the scenario that I'm afraid of is that you have some open carry, militia. I don't even want to, I hate to say the word militia because I don't think the people in those groups are powerful enough.
They're not.
In terms of moral power. But they, they fancy themselves militia members. So maybe they're not. Maybe they're just outside of the legal range, but they could still intimidate people. That is possible. That intimidation is still possible. And so I look to the headlines, and of course, Hillary Clinton's speech today on the radical fringe that is taking over the GOP. And again, I say yes. She is correct in her diagnosis of the harm and the effect. She is, I think that she is, does not see the way in which the system that she upholds generates that sort of radical fringe, sort of makes that radical fringe inevitably generate from our social dynamics. But that is definitely, those things are definitely real. We ignore them at our peril. But at the same time, I mean, this is what's strange and kind of surreal and almost postmodern about this race is, at the same time, the big scandal for Donald Trump this week is that he's wavering on immigration.
So there's
something that I don't understand about what Trump is doing, because all of this time, he's been doubling down on the hate messages, on these very socially destructive and prejudicial messages. I've said, well, he's not going to win that way, because all he's doing is doubling down on a bunch of ideas that voters have rejected in the last two presidential elections, and he's being a Nazi about it. He's being a jerk about it. But now this. Who's he going to win? Who is he going to win over? Is he going to win over some moderate Republicans? Is he going to win over Utahns? Is this a Utah ploy? Is he afraid of losing Utah? I don't understand, and I don't think that there is anything to understand. I don't think that what he is doing is supposed to make sense. I can explain it sociologically. I can explain it from the lens of my own ideology and my own personal political beliefs, but I can't explain it in terms of running a campaign. It doesn't make sense to me.
Well, no, it doesn't. It doesn't make sense. But of course, his whole campaign hasn't made sense. His whole campaign has always been about just insult whatever comes into his head. Right now, whatever squirrels are running around in his head are the ones that are going to get outlet. Regardless, he reads his audience. I mean, he's like an actor. I remember when I was in school, my ex-wife, she was my wife at the time, was a theater major, and I happened to get tickets to the plays that she went to, and she had an internship at this repertory theater in Logan, Utah. It was called the Lyric Theater, and there was a repertory troupe, and they did like four or five different shows a week. I think they did they did four or five different plays over the course of the summer. The same actors playing different roles, obviously, throughout. And I remember this one night, I had seen this play two or three times before. I forget the name of the play, but there was an actor in there who was playing a part, and it just so happened that the audience happened to be an older audience. I guess the snowbirds had come up for the summer, and so it was an older audience, a lot of old, Aggie. I went to Utah State, so this was in Logan, Utah, so a lot of Aggie alums that were obviously older, because it was a much older audience. And this was an older actor, and he captivated them. Whatever he said, they laughed at. They just loved this particular actor. I mean, he was playing his lines. There was no change in the lines, but he was reading the audience, and he was playing it the way the audience wanted. And he had them in their hand for the entire hour and a half. I mean, he was on stage, off stage. He was playing his role. But every time he came on the stage, the audience physically reacted to his presence. Mm-hmm. And that's what, that's, and I, you know, I was, because I'd seen this play 3-4 times before. And so I was just watching it again because I had nothing to do on, you know, this particular Thursday night or whatever. And there it was. I mean, it was an electricity whenever he came on in the audience, an electricity whenever he came on the stage. And I was amazed at that. And I think that's the power that Donald Trump has over his audiences. He reads his audiences. And if he says something that clicks in his brain that says this, therefore that, and then he can just say it, and now he can offend, you know, some subgroup. You know, he can go ahead and just start offending women or gays or hell, veterans, for all we know. He can just offend whoever he wants because that's what his audience is expecting, and what they want to hear. In this case, though, he has a new campaign manager, right? The guy from deadbreitbart.com or whatever it's called.
Yes.
And of course he's a bigot, and so he's kind of putting some leashes on Trump, which of course he's not used to. And this guy is thinking, you know what, we need to soften our tone because we do need to reach out to people who are undecided at this point. Now, he's not going to win them, but he's going to do this, and of course he's going to alienate his base while he does this. But of course his base isn't going to turn around because of course Hillary is the devil to them. Hillary is a, sure, you know, a palsied, dangerous, she's a disabled devil, and nothing's going to change their mind. So you're right, it makes no sense why he would be doing this. But from somebody who's coming in trying to salvage a campaign, it kind of makes sense. Hey, let's try to just get a few votes out of here and here and here. It's not going to work at this late time in the game. But the idea here
I don't see how that happens. And you know, and it seems like the media has started to decide now that none of the scandals for Clinton really matter. And, you know, and again, like I said, I don't believe that Hillary Clinton is any more corrupt than any other Washington insiders.
No, I agree. And I have to say that even if you were to say that she was corrupt, and I don't believe there's a pay for play with anything you want to say, anything they want to say about this Clinton Foundation issue while she was Secretary of State. I don't think there was. But even if there were, it does not rise to the level of corruption of the coward and traitor George W. Bush, the cowards and traitors George W. Bush and Dick Cheney, when it comes to the Carlyle Group and Halliburton making billions of dollars off the war, off the illegal war for profit that they started. So, I mean, that is the epitome of corruption. It's a reverse mercantilism using war as the mechanism for extracting profit from the American taxpayer and giving it to your cronies. That's exactly what it was. And that is corruption.
Let's give a little bit of time to some other candidates. I want to draw attention to, this is actually an article from a little over a week ago by Bill Scherr over at Politico.com. Did Gary Johnson just get boxed out of the debates? And it begins, when the Commission on Presidential Debates on Monday finalized its rules for determining which candidates get invited to this fall headline debates, it suddenly made Libertarian Dark Horse candidate Gary Johnson's job a whole lot harder. Johnson, a former Republican who has been picking up voters disaffected by Donald Trump, has had his eye on winning a debate slot all summer. Though he has conceded that extraordinary things have to happen for him to win, it's the debates that matter. If he can get on stage, his strategists think he has a chance to upset a race that has left a huge number of Americans unhappy with their choices. He already knew the threshold for a debate invitation of 15% showing in polls, a hurdle no third-party candidate has overcome since the commission set that bar in the 2000 campaign. Of course, as you remember, folks, Ross Perot was in the debates. And the combination of the polls the commission just announced it will use to make the cut and the decision of most of the sponsoring media outlets to include both Johnson and Green Party nominee Jill Stein in those polls effectively made the bar tougher for him to clear. With Stein siphoning off some of the anti-establishment vote he's counting on, Johnson is probably going to end up watching the debates at home. Of course, the obvious implication there is that Jill Stein will also not be in the debates. And so here is what I have said. I've said this for years, particularly because I would rather, not just because of my own political beliefs, but just because I would rather watch a debate with more candidates than fewer candidates. But here's what I've said for years. I don't think the 15%, I disagree with the 15% threshold. I think that a better threshold is whether they have qualified for federal matching funds and whether, you've got to achieve a certain amount of support, a certain amount of financial support to do that, a certain amount of numerical support to do that. I think that the better test would be whether the Federal Election Commission considers you a legitimate candidate and not whether these polls are incredibly arbitrary. Many of them have various types of flaws in them. Oftentimes polls have been wrong, have overestimated losing candidates' votes and all sorts of things. So I think if they qualify for federal matching funds, they should be in the debates, period.
I don't disagree with that, and I think that's a good threshold. But I think a more better, as my physics professor used to say, a more better way of saying it is if they could theoretically win in the Electoral College, if they are on the ballot in enough states to get the 270 votes needed,
right,
theoretically,
right,
whether or not, so California, New York, Texas, if you can get on enough states to where you could theoretically win 270 votes, you should be in. Because I think
that's a good threshold too. The Greens are going to, Jill Stein is going to be on the ballot in anywhere between by my estimation, and I've got inside green information, folks. That's me, Mr. Inside Green. The Greens are going to be on the ballot in between 44 and 47 states. Gary Johnson, the Libertarian, is going to be on the ballot, I think, in all 50 states. And I think that's an even better threshold even than the one I suggested, because that says, look, it's theoretically possible. We're not going to worry about the polls. And at most, that's going to mean that a couple more candidates get in the debates and you have four. And maybe sometime in the future, the Constitution Party candidate really, really goes to town, or they run some very attractive person with a very telegenic personality or something. Maybe they get on the ballot and then you have five candidates. What the heck's wrong with that? I just don't see the problem. I don't see the problem with that. You see the problem with – I see why the two-party system doesn't like it, but I don't see
that's the problem.
As America,
that is the problem. The two-party system is the problem. That's the thing, is that if you had five people on that stage, it means it's much less likely that the Democrat or Republican would naturally just sweep it and just give away the store. And that's why the two-party system doesn't like it, because that's what it's designed to be. That's what
I think it would radically change the messaging strategies of every party, of the major parties, of the smaller parties. Everyone would change the way that they do business if they knew that they would all be represented in the debates in front of the American people. And we have just a little less than a minute left, but I want to thank you, Gary, for everything that you brought to the table tonight.
Oh, no, thank you, Matt. Thank you you're the one who keeps us smart. as far as I'm concerned, I'm so glad, basically I just kind of led the conversation going, this is what I want to talk about tonight. And then of course you bring in your encyclopedic knowledge about what's going on. And then of course it makes it entertaining for everybody. Again, we have about 20 seconds left. I want to thank our audience tonight. And of course, those who will be listening on the podcast. This is Shared Sacrifice Media. We're doing Deflection 2016 every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Mountain Time right here on Blog Talk Radio. I wish everyone a good weekend, and we'll see you next week. See you later, Matt.
See you next week, everybody. Bye, guys.